again. He beat some of them with fists, others with clubs. He used burning cigarettes to sear their genitals. He once told a boy that he could earn his freedom if he let Gacy urinate on him. The boy agreed. Gacy did it. Then he tied him down and raped him again. The killings were rarely quick. Gacy relished control. He used a garrote, a length of rope knotted around a wooden stick. He called it his rope trick. He'd place the loop over the boy's neck and twist. The pressure cut off blood flow to the brain, causing seizures and convulsions. The eyes bulged. The face swelled. Some of them bit their lips so hard they tore the flesh. Gacy would keep twisting until they stopped moving. Then he'd watch for a while, just to be sure. He masturbated during or after some of the murders. Sometimes he'd fall asleep beside the body. Afterward, he'd wrap the corpse in plastic sheeting, sometimes old carpeting, sometimes just garbage bags. Then came the crawl space. He had dug it himself, laboriously carving out trenches beneath the house. He used lime to suppress the smell, but it didn't work. Even so, no one ever questioned the odor. He buried each body with careful, almost surgical precision. Layer by layer, he built a graveyard under his home. When the crawl space filled, he dumped the remaining bodies in the Des Plaines River. To outsiders, he was jovial, even lovable. He posed for photos with governors. He was active in the local Democratic Party. He visited hospitals in costume as Pogo the Clown, bouncing on his toes, honking a red rubber horn. The patients never knew they were looking into the eyes of a man who had killed dozens. His neighbors described him as friendly but quirky. The occasional smell? Maybe sewer issues. Gacy would laugh and blame moisture. He was strategic with his lies. When questioned about the disappearances of boys who worked for him, he'd say they ran away. He'd show fake messages. He claimed to have helped some of them find work in other cities. Parents who tried to push further were often met with stonewalling. The boys had no paper trail. Many were never officially reported missing. Gacy targeted the lost, the abandoned, the voiceless. At night, he sat in the living room above the crawl space and watched television. He could hear the bodies settling beneath the floorboards. He claimed they talked to him sometimes. He once joked to a friend that the smell from the basement was just rotting rats. No one laughed. The truth finally began to crack through in 1978. A boy named Robert Peast went missing after telling his mother he was going to see a man about a job. That man was John Wayne Gacy. For years, Gacy had murdered with impunity. He had raped, strangled, buried, and dumped without consequence. His charm had shielded him, but the mask, painted in crimson and white, was beginning to slip. The clown makeup could no longer hide the monster. And underneath the suburban lawn, the dead were waiting. The house at 8213 West Summerdale Avenue sat quietly in the December wind, its windows reflecting the dull, gray light of a cold Chicago morning. Nothing about the exterior hinted at the magnitude of horror inside. But below the floorboards, beneath the everyday clutter of a working-class life, lay the twisted reality of a man who believed he owned the souls he took. Gacy moved the corpses with methodical efficiency. His basement was his workspace. He'd sometimes leave bodies for days, even weeks, before burying them. The smell was so powerful that he once poured several bags of powdered lime over the open earth and lit sticks of incense upstairs to mask the stench. But the decay could not be hidden entirely. The flesh softened quickly. Fluids leaked onto the dirt, soaking it dark and thick. Bones cracked under weight. Insects multiplied. Sometimes he would return to inspect the remains, pulling back the plastic sheeting to examine the faces of those he had silenced. He once dug up a body to reposition it so he could fit another beside it more neatly. There were layers. Some of the victims were stacked on top of each other. The deeper he dug, the more he reshuffled. A few of the bodies were crammed into corners where even light struggled to reach. They were twisted in unnatural positions, knees tucked against chests, elbows bent at impossible angles.